Welcome once again to the psychedelicparenting.org podcast. I am your host, Jonathan. Happy Cinco de Mayo, or as our friends at the Aware Project in Los Angeles are calling it, Cinco de Sapo. They will be hosting a special event tonight at the Collective HQ on Selby Avenue in celebration of our psychedelic amphibian friend, the Sonoran Desert Toad. This event will feature a talk by James Orak, author of Tryptamine Palace, 5-MeO-DMT, and the Sonoran Desert Toad, A Journey from Burning Man to the Akashic Field. Also appearing will be our friend, the Tea Fairy, who will be reading an amazing poem-slash-performance art piece that she debuted at this Exploring Psychedelics conference I recently attended in Ashland, Oregon, where it received a standing ovation. If you're in Los Angeles tonight, this will be a must-see event. Doors open at 7, and tickets are $33, which includes dinner. A link to the Eventbrite ticket page is in the program notes to this show. Before we begin the show, I'd like to thank my friend and soul brother Brad Adams, who invited me to speak this past Sunday at the May meeting of the Los Angeles Medicinal Plant Society. I had intended to make the talk available for everyone, but was so wrapped up in the live music that was playing before me that I forgot to record it, so I apologize. I would also like to thank my friend Elijah Cook, who has graciously offered to be our new webmaster, as well as hosting www.psychedelicparenting.org free of charge. Thank you so much, Elijah. Thanks to the donations we've received thus far, we have been able to cover our podcasting hosting costs for the entire year. If you find value in our offerings here, please consider a tax-deductible gift through our fiscal sponsor, MAPS. Just click the purple Donate Now button in the notes to this podcast. Today's show is the second half of a conversation I conducted with Zoe Helena over the psychedelic holidays at the end of last month and comprised over 2 hours of great discussion. Because of this, we decided to air it as a two-part episode. If you missed part one, click at the link at the top of the podcast notes and go listen to that one. I did not, however, cut the conversation off in the middle of a topic, so this show functions as a standalone conversation as well. Zoe Helena is a multidisciplinary artist and animal rights activist. She's the founder of Cosmic Sister, which through its Plant Spirit Grant, Women of the Psychedelic Renaissance, and Women of Cannabis Grants, is dedicated to recognizing and elevating feminist voices in the growing psychedelic renaissance, and to supporting visionary women in the exploding world of cannabis business and studies. Zoe is also the wife and partner of ethnobotanist, writer, and Fox News personality Chris Killam, and manages social media and web presence for The Medicine Hunter. Zoe has accompanied Chris on many trips to the Amazon and elsewhere, looking for healing plants and soul-transforming experiences. She is an artist, writer, journalist, and a visionary explorer in her own right. She has been featured in Boston Magazine, Forbes, The Boston Globe, Alternet, Chicago Tribune, Newsday, MIT Technology Review, Utney Reader, and Fast Company. Enjoy today's conversation. I read somewhere that that there is really only like 2% of the population of the South were actually slave owners. And the thing I was reading about this was like, if it was really only 2% of the people that owned slaves, and we actually basically like went to war with our people of our own country over this very small thing in terms of who is actually, you know, being affected. It's pretty interesting that the people who did own slaves in the South were able to convince this entire population of people that like they should fight for this thing that was actually like bad for them. Like poor white people, if there's slavery, like how are you going to get a job if, you know, everyone's basically doing the jobs for free because they have no choice?
The big plantation owners had the money.
Right. Yeah.
They ran the media.
Right.
It's the same as today.
Right.
But the point is that, yes, that's true.
Right.
My father, you know, his mother came from aristocracy, Southern aristocracy. His father was more of, you know, an immigrant from the Scotland,
mm-hmm.
who came down because that's where his wife wanted to live. And my dad grew up basically with working musician parents. They were mm-hmm. classical musicians. And they loved him, but we were very focused on their work. Mm-hmm. They practiced 8 hours a day every day till they died. So he had nannies, and the nannies were black.
Uh-huh.
And when my grandmother and grandfather died, there were these boxes of photos that I'd never seen. And many of them were my dad as a little boy with his big black arm holding him.
Uh-huh.
He never saw the woman.
Wow, that's interesting.
It was just a big arm holding little Billy.
Wow.
They were nameless and faceless women who brought up my father.
Oh, my
and
word.
I thank them for how well they brought him up. He's a good fella, you know, but I don't know who they are. I can't find them. I can't thank them. That's so wrong. Is that slavery? Well, no, but it was still really bad.
Yeah, it was still like this demarcation of like who is a person and who isn't a person. And yeah, the fact that you could take it, imagine taking a picture of someone holding your kid and not put the person in the photo. I think that's a profound reflection on the way that they saw these people.
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly. And yet that they would entrust her with their child.
Right.
And raising their child, which goes back to this parenting podcast, if you think about it. You know, I mean, ultimately, my father was brought up by a string of Southern Black women.
Yeah.
Who I don't know.
Right, right. You don't know. Yeah.
But who I'm grateful for because they did a good job.
Yeah, that's really interesting.
They taught him good things, you know?
Yeah.
But anyway, I guess that's important too, because if you look at it, when you go back to psychedelics, one of the things about it that's really important to me is that it has the ability to help us break through our social programming.
Yes.
Including things that really, really need to go.
Yes.
Like racism.
Mm, indeed.
And those things are so deeply ingrained in us. It takes work. It doesn't just take one ceremony. It takes work to work through these things and to reintegrate them into your life afterwards.
Yes.
So I think part of our job in terms of mentoring others, whether they be young or not, maybe they could be just people entering the psychedelic, you know, world,
mm-hmm.
Who aren't young at all. They're still needing guidance.
Yeah, definitely.
And these are the kinds of things that we can help to share with them, to help them to see, you know, nothing to be afraid of. You will change, but you'll be more yourself, your true self.
Right.
It's not going to, you know, I had somebody fairly big, really concerned that he would change into somebody else.
Mm.
And I said, no. It's a process of coming back to your true self.
Right.
And there, you'll recognize that person.
Right. I think that, though, there is an important aspect to the psychedelic experience that fear points to. And I sometimes don't think that it's unwarranted. And that is that when you reflect on what's important and what's not important in your life, you tend to make decisions that are good for your spirit, but, you know, might not necessarily make you more money or have more prestige. So like a friend of mine and I were just a couple of years ago said we wanted to write a book called Psychedelics Ruined My Life. And it'd just be like this tongue in cheek thing about how, you know, we're happier as human beings, but we're significantly poorer than we probably would be. Yeah.
But see, that comes down to the nature of wealth.
Indeed it does. Yes.
Yes. And see, this is where I was going to go. When I'm going back to the theater because I'm embarrassed to say how trained I am. Okay. I mean, it's embarrassing, but what the theater is really about, the reason I picked theater out of all the arts is because it is a collaborative art that uses all the arts. It's the only one. So it's about human condition. They're humans. They're about humans. They're about what it is to be human, no matter where you were and when you lived.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So that study set me up for this in a really interesting way. And I think it's kind of unique. Like the woman I was telling you about, Patricia Ziffrat, who was the costume designer, who did all those shows.
Yeah.
One of the things about her that was unique was she was a scientist first. The sciences and the arts are allies.
Mm-hmm.
Very much so. So she too held the foundations, but she moved into art. What she would do is she was known for really researching the culture that she was going to express through costume. And costume is not just something to look good on the stage and to evoke mood. It's all of those things. But it's storytelling through clothing. You are clothing the characters of the play, okay? The characters are wearing clothes. They're not wearing costumes. They're wearing clothes. So it's about what you wear, why you wear it, and who you are. What does that thing mean in your, you know, why did this person wear this in that period?
Mm-hmm.
You know, where does that put them in terms of social status?
Right.
It was very, very intricate and interesting. So she was actually sent with these big Broadway shows and big films too. She was sent to the country often like Chris. Okay. Like he does, you know,
right.
He'll go and he'll learn the plant by living with these people in the middle of nowhere half the time. And mm-hmm. he'll really, really learn about it through being there. She did the same thing, but with clothes.
Wow. That's really interesting.
textiles, etc., jewelry, hair, makeup, all of that. So I learned from her how how fascinating that is. And when you also, another thing you learn is you learn scripts and you learn about people through time and what it is to be human. What is it that stays, that's always there, and what isn't?
Mm-hmm.
What is a social structure that may be antiquated to us today? Like, for instance, if you were to look at Molière, you'll look at some of the comedy of manners of the 70s in France.
Mm-hmm.
School for Scandal is a great example. School for Scandal is going to seem a little dated, okay? Some of the language especially.
Okay.
But the characters, hysterical. You would recognize them all.
Uh-huh.
And even though it's the 1700s in France, and they're wearing these outrageous things, what you'll notice is they're very much the way we are today in the United States. Trump is a perfect example. He's totally the kind of character that would show up in School for Scandal.
So he does, yeah, and he does have the sort of like coiffed, like hair, like so. It's
he would be a fop.
Yeah,
they call him a fop.
That's funny.
No, it is. And so, but you also begin to say, well, what are the things that, there's always an arc to the play, and it's usually, you know, the protagonist or protagonists going through, you know, there's usually an antagonistic figure or figures, and there's a conflict and a resolution, pretty much, whether it's comedy or drama or whatever.
Right.
And you'll see this, you know, in the arc of the script, which is the, you know, the map, really, or the arc is kind of like the drafting, you know, that pulls it all together. But let's say it's a drama or even in a comedy, there's suffering, there's conflict. Those conflicts are often to do with the social constructs of the time.
Mm-hmm.
So if you want to learn about humans, study the theater.
Interesting.
So, you know, or movies today. Movies, like I said, are theater. It's easier to see them. But if you look at the old scripts, you really begin to learn. The difference between movies really is, like, these days you can look so easily at the older movies. So you could even look at a movie done in the 30s and see, wow, we've really come a long way. Mm-hmm. Those things aren't even issues anymore.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
You know, Richard III, it's all about him being a bastard.
Mm-hmm.
As a, you know, unwed mother.
Right.
Who cares?
Yeah.
Today, who cares? It's irrelevant.
Yeah, there's that aspect in Game of Thrones as well, how, like, about the role of, like, the bastard sons of all these kings and regional lords and stuff.
Well, my point with this is that today we can free ourselves, potentially,
right,
from many of these really irrelevant, I mean, they're stupid, a lot of them, these social constructs that keep us back and put and make us suffer needlessly. They're not real. And I think psychedelics is, it, in my opinion, it's the quickest way to rid yourself of that stuff.
Yep, I agree.
And that's why I'm interested. And I would say that to any young person.
So one of the things that I did want to ask you is, you know, in terms of giving advice to young people, what... So if, you know, there's some of our listeners are younger and not every single person has kids. And one of the things that younger people, when I speak at university conferences and stuff, people ask me, well, you know, either they want to talk about how to talk to their parents, or they want to say, like, I have younger brothers and sisters or nieces and nephews who are, you know that I'm into this stuff and are starting to ask me. And I don't know how to navigate that space in the right way. And so maybe you could give them like two or three things to remember or ways to navigate those changing relationships.
Well, I think that's a pretty wide range of ages there. That's one of the things. I mean, I do think that it's important to consider that not everybody should do psychedelics.
Mm-hmm.
I do think that there is a danger to some people doing psychedelics, and a lot of things our minds haven't necessarily matured yet in certain ways. There are psychological or mental illnesses, if you will. That's a strong statement, but mental conditions like schizophrenia, mm-hmm. what they used to call manic depression,
right.
that can really come on strong in your early 20s.
Yeah.
And you may or may not ever have shown signs yet.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think it's a good idea to be doing psychedelics if you're a person that's prone to that. So it's not as simple as, wow, this stuff is great, everybody should do this. I really don't think that's true.
Mm-hmm.
And I do meet people who seem too damned fractured to me. They need very they need attention and care by somebody preferably really trained in Western psychology as well. Mm-hmm. And while it's illegal here in the United States, we're not having that kind of thing isn't readily available, and it should be. You know, it's not, you have to go down to the Amazon to drink ayahuasca.
Right. Well, yeah, you don't have to, but if you, it's to do it legally, you definitely have to. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you know, I would, that's another thing I would say to the young people you're asking me. I would recommend highly that you do not do anything illegal.
Uh-huh.
I do not believe it should be illegal, but it is. And right. We live in a real world with a real legal system, and you don't want to go to prison.
That's true. That's true.
So I don't like it any more than they do, but you know, you make your own decisions in life, and I would recommend that you do not do anything illegal. I also think that, you know, the other things that are very, very important are, you know, I think we've talked about the vulnerability of young women, especially.
Yeah.
I have in my life known quite a few men who have been sexually molested, raped. And I do understand that it is the same for them, you know, in terms of like a sort of nipped in the bud thing that lasts through life.
Yeah.
But I also have been a young woman myself. Mm-hmm. So I know it more intimately in terms of some of the things, some of the mindsets and the rage also at being in this position in our culture. There is a rage factor.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I mean, you've got to talk to young women about it very seriously, about the pitfalls and the predators and what to watch for.
Well, you know, I do want to ask you, because this is something that's a part of sort of my thought process lately in conversations that I've had with people. And, you know, I think one of the first conversations you and I ever had that I remember having serious conversation with you was about, you know, the dangers of, you know, sexual predators in women going alone to the Amazon and, you know, ending up in dangerous situations. And, you know, I'm interested in what do you think that is a really big problem? And if so, what do you think this should be doing? What should be happening about it?
Well, first of all, I think it's a really big problem, period.
Uh-huh.
Everywhere.
Yeah, I agree.
Everywhere. And I have written an article, and it's just an article, and believe me, it could be books. You know, it's a subject that's so complex. But there's an article coming out in LA Yoga that I've got some of it out, and there's a lot of quotes by some really good people in the field.
Mm-hmm.
But one thing that I have to say is, you know, one of the psychiatrists who I quoted in there, she was talking about how she saw this happen in the when the gurus came through, you know, the whole sort of guru movement.
Right.
There were good people and there were not good people.
Right.
And there was a lot of spiritual abuse and sexual abuse for men, too.
Mm-hmm.
There were men who were molested as well.
Right.
But there were a lot of women. And there are certain things that you can watch for, like if somebody says you're special, that's run in the opposite direction. I mean, everybody's special. Everybody is special. That's what I would say to any young woman. You are special. You do not need some shaman telling you you're special. If that shaman tells you you're special, run.
Go run. That sounds like solid advice.
Because they're trying to seduce you with that. For the most part, I mean, they might be really seeing something wonderful in a person and whatnot, but you know, it's a vulnerability because a lot of times here's the thing. When we went to college, mm-hmm. okay, we were taught basic things to do to be safer in the world.
Mm-hmm.
Basics.
Right.
Don't walk at night by yourself,
mm-hmm.
no matter what and how stupid you feel about it. You know, because you feel stupid asking somebody to walk you to their car. Trust me, you feel stupid asking somebody to do that. You should not feel stupid. You are smart to ask that.
Mm-hmm.
And it should be a guy, unless it's another woman and you're going to both get in the car together. You know, you do not walk alone at night, ever.
Mm-hmm.
Because it only takes one time for a psychopath to take you and pull you into his van and whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And they're out there.
Sure, sure. But wait,
okay. Uh-huh. So I know that's not psychedelics, but we were taught basic things like that. Okay.
Right. Yeah.
A whole slew of those things. So uh-huh. we knew we knew we were vulnerable. We knew there were people who could hurt us. Mm-hmm. And we were taught these basics. Okay, those things are not taught in the psychedelic community, to my knowledge. And I think they should be. Uh-huh. Whatever it is, the basic things that you need to know, just like that, same things. If you're going to go to a ketos, uh-huh. don't go by yourself. And if you are going to go by yourself, you know, find somebody that you can trust, preferably another woman who you can stick with.
Yeah.
The buddy system is really helpful. People are less likely to try to, you know, rape somebody by themselves. Yeah. Well, rather with someone else is what I'm trying to say. Mm-hmm. So if you're two women together, that's a tougher target. Mm-hmm. Also, you can agree before you go, if you're going with a girlfriend or a sister or something, you can say, hey, I don't know what I'm going to be like in this space, mm-hmm. in this mindset. And I don't think I'm sexually vulnerable, or I do think I'm sexually vulnerable. I don't know how I'm going to be. I want you to watch out for me and tell me if I'm about to screw up, or I'm weak, or I'm, you know, tell me.
That's good, yeah. You know,
but if you don't have that agreement first going in, then it's unlikely to work. Because if, let's say there's a woman who, one of my sisters was very vulnerable to this. Both of them were, but one of them in particular. She would be exactly the type of person who would find every possible reason to sleep with the shaman. Mm-hmm. And if the shaman didn't seduce her, she would have proactively tried to seduce him. Uh-huh. She's exactly the type. These are the most vulnerable women because predators look for the vulnerable ones. Mm-hmm. Those are the ones they're interested in. Mm-hmm. But they're not, it's not just those. There's every type in the world. There's also men who want the ones that are hard to get, who are not vulnerable, that they have to really work for. Mm-hmm. Everybody is vulnerable, is my point. Mm-hmm. Plus, when you then put into your body this very strong psychedelic potion, mm-hmm. and you're intentionally going into a trance state where you're very open, right. That's the point.
Right, right.
Then you are not yourself in that way, and your boundaries may shift, and you don't know what's going to come up. Because a good friend of mine happens to be a beautiful Black woman. She said to me once, and she was right on, all women in this culture are abused. Hmm. We're all abused by our culture. Now, if that sounds strong, well, it is strong, but it's true.
Oh, it's true. Yeah.
So we all have our vulnerabilities. Mm-hmm. And when you go down there and you've got somebody to watch out for you and say, hey, you told me to tell you, you have this, you know, whatever it is, whatever your agreement is, got somebody watching out for you.
Yeah.
More than one person, if you can. Watch out for each other. And just basically, friends, don't let friends sleep with shamans. That's original.
Nice. That's good.
Yeah, well, it's so basic, but it's true. It's like, well, God, you know, why don't people talk about this? Mm-hmm. Because here's the thing. Being raped, I was never raped, okay? But many of my friends were. Mm-hmm. And I was in situations where I was just, I had a guardian angel or something, because I don't know how I got out without being raped. Mm-hmm. At least 5 times I can think of. And 3 of them were with groups of men. So, but I got out. I didn't get raped, actually, but I was in the situation and I learned from the situation. So I don't know what it's like to live with that actual pain and that actual wound of having been raped. But I can tell you that imagining that on a psychedelic mm-hmm. is beyond my comprehension, what that would do to damage a person.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
It's like, we've upped the ante here.
Right.
And that's not to belittle any rape, because any rape is terrible. And I can't say one is worse than the other, but imagine.
No, it's, yeah. It's,
you know, your own psychedelic experiences, especially with ayahuasca.
Yeah.
Now imagine being abused by somebody.
Oh, yeah. My first weekend on with ayahuasca, I had a particular state where like for like 3 hours, I could not move my body. Even I wanted to be able to move, and like I couldn't figure out how to connect my brain to my muscles. It was like I was so, you know, pulled into the experience. And yeah, you're so vulnerable. You have to be with people that you can trust and be open to, and know that they care about your well-being. You have to.
You know, it's interesting. Our community is really wanting to legalize these things, okay? The use of psychedelics in responsible ways, right. You know? And that's the key word. And responsible also means being informed. Inform yourself. Ask around. Don't just jump into it.
Right.
So one of the things with the MAP, you know this, is the MAP's mission statement is so well put. My fiscal sponsorship is about educating, mm-hmm. you know, the helping to educate the public on the benefits and risks of psychedelics and cannabis. The risks thing, it's part of it, but that doesn't mean the rewards are not worth the risk, because I think they are.
I agree, yes.
And I'm very pro psychedelics and cannabis, but I'm also like, look, you know, be responsible. You can't take that experience back. If that happens to you, it happened to you.
Right.
You know, you don't get a chance to avoid it again. You know, you might, but I mean, you've had it happen. It happened.
Right.
We're all vulnerable in different ways too. That's another thing. Every person is different. And I think with the thing with predators, I think back on myself, and I've spent a lot of time when I was writing that article for LA Yoga. I got into a deep meditation and really went back into my early 20s. Mm-hmm. And I was kind of like amazed by the rage that I remember I had really put aside. I had forgotten how much anger there was about that. Mm-hmm. It really pissed me off that I didn't have the freedom that the men had, that to just walk around.
Right, right.
You know, I didn't like that. And I thought it was ludicrous and backwards. And, you know, how could we be living in a civilization, modern civilization, and let this still happen?
Right.
And I haven't seen any change in that. I mean, no. I live in a college town. There's 5 college towns here. Mm-hmm. There's rapes all the time.
Right. Right. And you know? I drive cab on the weekends, and I live in a college town. Uh-huh. So, you know, I've had situations, you know, where like I watch the interactions between people, and I have called dudes out. Like, I don't care what they say. Like, I'm like, dude, I'm not going to just be okay with you, you know, doing your sort of like, you know, date rape thing with me in the process. I'm not going to pretend like that kind of stuff doesn't happen. But that's the kind of thing that, you know, points to like our culture always wants to, you know, blame women for rape. And I think that it's important to sort of predicate that the conversation we're having about the Amazon is different cultures interacting together. And so it's, I think that that's an appropriate conversation. But when it comes to like our own culture and the fact that, you know, women go to college and they have a class on how to not get raped, and it never addresses the fact that like men have self-control. It never does.
I think that you're absolutely right. I mean, when I talk about Cosmic Sister, it's predominantly for women, but the truth is that we're all in this together, and we really are. And that's not everybody in between. There's an awful lot of conversation going on about identity and gender. Okay. Right. So, and I appreciate that conversation too, but to keep it more simple, because I am in a female body, and I was born a female, and I was raised a female in a culture, and I identify with being a female. Right. That's all I've got to offer, really.
Right.
Okay. That's my experience.
Yeah.
And I'm 50. It's half a century of that. Okay. I've grown up with that.
Yeah.
So I look at it and I think, okay, when I talk to another woman in her early 20s or whatever, and she also was born female and identifies as being female and has grown up to that point being female, there are things that are the same. Unfortunately, our culture has not changed in this regard. And if anything, you know, there's certainly as much sexual abuse, rape, whatever you want to call it, going on right here at home. Okay.
Yes.
Now you take that young woman, you put her in the Amazon. Mm-hmm. There's, again, it's like a wide variety of girls. I'm going to tell you a story. I'm not going to use any names. Mm-hmm. You know, Chris taught this very popular class at UMass for about 13 years mm-hmm. called the Shaman's Pharmacy.
Okay.
They went to the Amazon. They learned about all the things. Many of them had never been to South America. We looked about the rainforest and rainforest plants and all of that. We did learn about psychoactive and psychedelic plants and shamanism.
Right.
But we had to sign papers that they were not going to drink. While we were there, we stayed at an eco retreat, really wonderful place. And these women were all individuals.
Mm-hmm.
So this one woman was doing her I am sexually liberated thing, and it was just entirely inappropriate, naive, actually.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't going to say anything, but I was watching her thinking, yeah, she thinks she's progressive, but actually she's one, putting these other girls at risk. And two, Dr. Joe Tafur from Nuhui Rao, he'd be like, yeah, and she could catch some venereal disease. Look, you know, that's true too. And
right.
Today with the Zika virus, that's very serious. Because
uh-huh.
It can apparently stay in semen for 6 months.
Wow.
Yeah. And you don't even know you have it. So the man doesn't even know he has it. So if you go down to the Amazon and you get it, you don't want to have sex for 6 months. You got to think about that now. It's serious.
Right.
Read up. Okay.
Yeah.
So now that's a whole new thing, but you got to think about that too, sexually transmitted diseases. You know, all of these things are parts of it, but I bring this woman up because she was a very nice woman. She was just young, but I remember it because I remember thinking that young woman would be very vulnerable in a shamanic situation with ayahuasca. Not a woman who was disempowered. She was quite empowered. Confident, smart, educated, talented.
Uh-huh.
She just had this thing about having to prove her sexual liberation. But that doesn't mean she wouldn't be hurt by sleeping with a shaman under the influence of ayahuasca. Because that is not right.
Right.
So she's it's not all the people who've been raped when they were 15 and have wounds like that to heal in the Amazon that are the vulnerable ones, is my point.
Mm-hmm.
It's a whole slew. So you've got to go. So that's one thing I'd say to people is just go to the Amazon with the understanding that you just do not do that.
Mm-hmm.
You have to make that commitment.
Mm-hmm.
This is not the place to have sex. Sex is great. Sex is really awesome and healthy and wonderful. You know, nothing wrong with sex, but this is not the time or place. And that's why it's part of the dieta. There's a reason.
Right.
And, you know, you commit to the dieta and there's, you know, you're supposed to put those things aside. So I think that's a huge thing. But there's other things. That's not the only danger of going into psychedelics in the Amazon.
Mm-hmm.
That's not the only thing I would say. I would also say to young kids, be careful of belief systems.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you and I talked about that.
Yeah.
There are subcultures within the psychedelic scene that I run across because of the grant,
mm-hmm.
Where I hear, especially young women, but men too, there's just almost like a regurgitation of this. It's not a very nice word, but it does seem like they're just, it's an outpouring of learned languages that are fantastical.
Mm. I think the term used before, I think, was psychedelic jargon.
Yeah, but it's like when there's every second word is jargon,
mm-hmm.
and there are these belief systems behind it, you just kind of go, well, in some ways, psychedelics may be good for this person because they may break through some of that.
Mm-hmm.
But in other ways, it's kind of concerning that they've already been pulled into this subculture and have acquired that they have not got a strong enough self-identity already to not be vulnerable to that kind of programming or cultural pressure,
mm-hmm.
peer pressure, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
And they're searching, you know, young people are searching for things.
Yes,
they want
yes.
to belong, want to belong. Everybody wants to belong somehow, but when you're that age, you really want to belong, right?
Mm-hmm.
You want to find yourself, and maybe you're coming from a broken home, or maybe you're, you know, you're whatever. Maybe you've had your heart broken for the first time. That sucks. Remember that?
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, there's all kinds of things. You know, take someone experienced with you. That would be something I would say.
Mm-hmm. That's good.
That you can trust.
Yeah.
But ultimately, it is, there are risks. It concerns me when I see that, you know, people who just haven't even considered those risks.
Yeah.
Just flying into it like it's just the trendy thing to do.
Love and light.
Magical thinking.
Yeah.
I love magic for fun, but magical thinking is like, you know, it can be put you in danger.
Right. I think it's important for us to point out too the significant cultural differences between the world of the ayahuasquero and the world of like new age psychedelic people. Because, yeah, you know, in the Amazon, it's ayahuasca, it's not all love and light. It's, you know, it's just power and it depends on the person, whether the power is good for used for good or evil.
Yeah. The first thing I always say to the women I bring down there just before the shaman comes in, I'll say, just remember, we're here because I really respect the shaman. He or she is very talented and well-trained, and I've had some great experiences, but they are just human beings.
Mm-hmm.
It's not magic.
Right.
They're here to guide us in this ceremony, and respectfully, you know, we are going to let them do that.
Mm-hmm.
But they're not magic. They're not going to wave their wands. And they always look at me and go, right. They get it.
Mm-hmm.
They get it. You know, but I mean, I think that's really important.
It's important to have someone to say that. Yeah.
Yeah. Because if you don't say that, you see it in their faces when they go, right. Because you realize that that's what they were thinking.
Mm-hmm.
It's natural. The shaman, the magic, the magician, and every person is different. You know, I want to bring up Joe again because it's something he said I really thought was very good. You know, he's a man and he's a shaman. He's also a medical doctor, but he's a full-on shaman now.
Uh-huh.
He said, when I was asking him, I was interviewing him on the LA Yoga story, he said something that I thought was really good. He said, you know, these shamans that manipulate and sleep with women, they just give all the good shaman a bad name.
Yeah.
There's some really great guys out there who would never even think of doing such a thing, or good, healthy relationships with their partners. And it's just terrible what they go through with this.
Mm-hmm.
And he's right. He's right. It doesn't mean that they're not still the really bad guys, because there are plenty.
Sure.
But there are wonderful people there too.
Right.
And that's really where the discernment comes in. But you have to know what you're looking for in order to be discerning.
Right.
You know, I think Lily Roth, she talks about predators being, you know, often very charming. That is true.
Yeah. Yes.
So, you know, you might think this is a really nice guy, and he might be a nice guy. But if he tries to, you know, as Chris says, give you a shamanic vulva massage, he's not a nice guy. Right. You have to know that going in, like, oh, his hand is on my breast. Not good. Not a nice guy.
Right.
You have to know that is a line that person crossed. That person is not supposed to cross that line, and he knows it.
Mm-hmm.
So no matter what you thought he was, you were mistaken. You know, these are so basic, but when you're young, you know, they're new.
And you need someone to tell you.
Yeah, and you need someone to say, it's okay. You don't have to feel bad about it. It's your first time you've experienced it. You will experience that again in life.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there are bad people out there. There are predators of all shapes and sizes everywhere you go in life. That's just part of the way it is.
Mm-hmm.
You know, learn to identify them as best you can. Try to avoid them.
Yes.
And, you know, that's all you can do. And you just hope. You just hope. Yeah. The other thing that I think is really important is Toei. A lot of people talk about Toei being a real danger. I have to say, I did have a really great experience at Blue Morpho with the shaman there, who's a mestizo shaman. He's not a Shipibo shaman. Mm. Don Alberto, wonderful man. What a sweetie. And brilliant shaman. Really, really fine. He does put Toei in his brew, but it's not very much. It's just a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
He makes beautiful brew.
Mm-hmm.
And that brew, when I think back on the nights there, it was three or maybe four. I can't remember how many. It's a long time ago. But I remember the visions more than which night with which.
Mm-hmm.
The visions were beautiful and intense and very, very important to me in my life. I would not want to be without them.
Yes.
So it's not always about Toei. It's right. About how much and who's, you know, can you trust the person? But
right, it's like I was saying, it's power. Power is power.
Yes, it is. It's an abuse of power. It's right.
Mm-hmm. It can be used to, you know, transform your life, and it can be used to, you know, make you into a victim.
Well, I think we should talk about power too, because power also is something that can corrupt people.
Yes.
Over a period of time. They may not have had that corruption to begin with.
Mm-hmm.
You could say maybe it's a seed and it was always there.
Yes, and another, that's one thing that I've always, like, one of the things that Lily Ross has talked to me about is this idea of what she calls situational narcissism, where that's what she calls it. So, you know, someone might be a genuine human being and they get into a place where people stop, like, you know, second guessing them or questioning their authority. Yes. And they, you know, it turns into this, everyone turns into a yes man around you, and suddenly you get convinced that you're awesome. Yeah, and
yep. I call that the emperor's new clothes syndrome. Same thing.
Yeah.
Situational narcissism. Very good. Yeah. Because what happens is you're insulated and all of a sudden you're not getting the feedback that you used to get, and your trusted people who are daring to tell you the truth about what the hell's going on with you. Like, what is up with you? Something's changing. You're changing. You're getting power hungry, whatever. You're getting mean to people, whatever it is. They see it because they know you and they knew you when. Mm-hmm. But you don't believe them anymore because nobody else says that. So there must be something wrong with them. They must be jealous of you or whatever. I've seen that in two occasions in my life. I've watched that transition happen.
Interesting.
In a theater company and in a large high-tech company. It's a transition that happens. I'm sure it happens to shamans.
Yeah.
And, you know, we're part of that. And, you know, again, like at Nihui Rau, I love that they have the triumvirate. Mm-hmm. They have three people that are the founders of that place. Mm-hmm. So they can break each other's vote, too.
Ah, yeah. Yeah.
One man who's a Shipibo shaman, who's from there. Mm-hmm. And then they have Joe, who's Colombian American. And then they have Svita. Not Sita, but Svita from Canada. She's an artist. Very good. So a woman. And the three of them together will keep each other in check to a point. But there are still cultural differences because you're still dealing with South America and the Amazon.
Right. Yep. And that's...
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I was going to say that's something that's, I think, is a key component of this is I think that people would do themselves a service to spend some time understanding the culture that they're going into and how to be a guest in that culture.
Yes. And one of the things is you are agreeing to abstain from sex.
Yes.
And there are reasons. And that goes back for as long as we know about ayahuasca. I mean, there was sex as part of the diet. It makes perfect sense to me. You know, I remember the days when I would have felt pressured with my sexuality to perform or whatever. I remember those days as a younger woman. And it would have been all mixed up if I was with my guy at that time. At this time, you know, it doesn't matter. It's a whole other thing. You know, I'm in a different time in my life. I've worked through some of that stuff. But at that time, it would have been a big deal. So I think it's really important. We were down there with a woman who is a very, very attractive woman. And she actually felt the need to bring a male friend so that she would feel safe there. But then that gave him ideas that she was interested in him. So it was this really messy, messy scene. Mm-hmm. You see what I'm saying?
Yes, definitely.
So that doesn't work either. But see, that goes back to what I'm talking about, this rage. This what? You can't travel unless we get a guy? And it's true. I had forgotten until I spent time with her. I had forgotten that. Mm-hmm. I couldn't go anywhere without a big guy.
Right.
At certain periods of my life. Mm-hmm. I couldn't. Not even into a bar. Nothing.
Yeah.
So that's not fair.
No, it's not. And I really do think that, you know, we have the power in our own culture. We have it within our ability to change that about our culture, about our country. I don't think it's an easy thing to do, but, you know, one of the things that I tell young men is that, you know, you have to point out when men, other men that you care about are being douchebags. Like, you have to tell them, like, that's rapey and you should stop it or I won't be your friend anymore.
Right. Right. You know? Stand up to it.
Yeah.
Well, this is also, you know, this whole thing of where it's funny because on occasion somebody will write in asking about the grant, who's a guy.
Yeah.
And say, you know, it's really great that you're doing this for women. Have you ever considered maybe doing it for a guy? Mm-hmm. You know, and I always write back and say, look, you know, I would love to. If I had more money, I would do that in a heartbeat. But I really am trying to focus it because we're 50% of the planet and, you know, we're not 50% of the power. So until we are, and you can work with us on that too, you can help to write that balance. You know, until we are, I'm just, you know, I'm only one person and I'm going to focus on this. But as I move along in this project, it becomes more and more clear to me that we are really truly interlinked. You know, you can't be working only with women without talking to the men, because the men and the women, it's a relationship that goes back and forth. And the men are also being screwed. Their heads are being screwed too.
Yeah.
So I feel just as bad for the boys whose minds are being screwed by media or movies or video games or whatever, pornography. They're being brainwashed just like the girls are. You know, they're going to have to do their work in the space too to get rid of that. I feel for them. I wouldn't want a son watching that stuff.
Right.
Terrible. Violence. The violence. Oh, it's amazing. You know, so there's so much stereotyping that is shoved down boys' throats too, you know. You know, be this, be the that, have the abs of steel, all of that stuff. It's gotten, I honestly, maybe I'm wrong, but it seems like it's worse. You know, I was listening to a young man talk about how he couldn't get hard. He couldn't get an erection without having a porno film going, even when he was with his beautiful, you know, partner.
Wow. Yeah, that's
he was crying. He was crying when he called in on a radio show about this, and he was crying when he said it.
Wow.
So, I mean, these things go back to what something like ayahuasca can potentially help to heal in someone like that.
Right.
See, that young man, he's been shaped sexually, and this is a straight man, okay? So he's going to be with a woman.
Mm-hmm.
So how is it going to be for her now? You know, that's her partner. So we're all in it together. We can't really separate.
Right.
So,
yeah.
I wanted to just, you know, talk to you just a little bit about some of the women who are going on the grant this time.
Yeah, that'll be great. Yeah.
And kind of back to the 420 thing a little bit. Uh-huh. Connection there with ayahuasca and cannabis is really interesting to me. This group, the women themselves are so super cool. It's yes, Nisha is coming. And when we talked, it was really exciting because for her, you know, she's an experienced psychedelic, of course.
Yeah.
But this is new to her. And we had talked about how a lot of the culture talks about the healing. And, you know, you could sort of say everything's healing to a point. But I think that ayahuasca is not just about healing. I think it's also about inspiration and clarity and exploration. And as an artist, you know, I explore my work in the space sometimes. And she was like, that's great. That's what I'd like to do. And I said, well, I would be honored to in any way support you to work on what you're doing now, your passion, your book, your work with poetics, work on that in the space. I mean, because if that's your intention going in, that's a very different intention from working on some specific wound in your past. That doesn't mean that that wound's not going to surface and show up, because it probably will. But the intention will come back to the work you're doing. And it's a really beautiful way to do it. And a few of the women have done that and just really come up with fantastic, fantastic stuff, which, of course, is also healing.
Yeah.
So she's going to be doing that, which I'm really looking forward to. And that's we're going awesome. To Dreamland this time, which is a woman shaman in a small maloka. And there are only 9 people at this place. So we got the whole place to ourselves.
Oh, that's awesome.
And then we have a medical doctor coming. She is on a Harvard fellowship, and she'll have graduated in August. And she has been primarily focused on, she's in the integrated medicine department. She's been focused on yoga and health. So mind, body, spirit with yoga particularly. But she feels like she's been focusing mainly on yoga because she doesn't feel like at Harvard she could really focus on what she wanted to. Which was a little wilder. So she's really excited about going and trying ayahuasca in a traditional setting from that perspective. So I'm really looking forward to seeing what she comes up with. See, for me, I get this amazing experience of being able to witness that and just be part of it. And yet I also kind of try to keep keep my distance to a point where I don't want to like be in their space.
Yeah.
You know, invade their space, but I'm there as much as they want me or as little as they want me, but I still know that I'm part of getting them there.
That's beautiful, Zoe. That's awesome.
Oh, thank you. I love it. Now, she's a mother.
Uh-huh.
She's got a 10-year-old.
Yeah, so that's my son just turned 10.
Oh, there you go. You know the age. So I think that from a psychedelic parenting perspective, this is interesting too, because these are parents. Mm-hmm. So one of the things when I go through this whole list of questions it's a process of going back and forth with each person. And one of them was, you know, how is your family situation? You have a daughter, you know, are you going to be okay? Yeah, my husband's really supportive of this. Oh, good. Okay. And he's also a medical doctor. Oh, well, that's good too. So how does your daughter feel? Oh, she thinks mom's going on her adventure. Oh, great. Okay. That sounds like fun. So she's very supported.
Yeah.
See? So I love that.
That's wonderful.
And you know, with Nishay, it was like, she's got a young child.
Yeah. He's only but three. Yeah. Just turned.
Yeah. So is he going to be okay? You know, and she's like, yeah, he'll be fine.
She has wonderful support from her mom. It's really cool.
That's great.
Yeah.
Well, see, each person I had to go through this in different ways, and some of them were parents, is my point.
Uh-huh. That's awesome.
And some of them will be parents someday, maybe.
Sure. Yeah.
Rachel's going to come. She's the one who's doing the cannabis and yoga, Ganjasana.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Her and I just connected on Facebook.
Oh, good, good. Yeah. Now you should interview her. She's really cool. She has basically, she was inspired to do that by her ayahuasca experience on the first plant spirit grant. She was the first recipient. And she was in the shaman's pharmacy class at UMass. That's where I met her.
Have to talk to her then.
Yes. Yeah. She was one of the first students on the first trip. That's where we first connected. And when she graduated, she went to Colorado, got in the cannabis business. And she did something really astounding that just and courageous that blew my mind. And I was inspired to start the grant because of her.
Mm.
So now this is really fun. She and her fiance entered this contest for this very fancy cannabis wedding in Colorado. Mm. And they won.
Oh.
They were gifted this super expensive. and there's lots and lots of media involved. People are really interested in it. It's the first one, blah, 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 blah. And it's at this fancy retreat. So she will have been gone, you know, going through this all year until we get to December. She's going to have been in the media around cannabis. She will have gotten married at a big media event, and she'll be freshly married when we get down there to the Amazon, and she's in her Saturn return.
Mm.
You know, I'm not a big astrology person, but that is a developmental age for sure.
It is. Yeah. And yeah, that's an interest. That's going to be interesting for her to explore that, like being away from that person in that space. Cause I know that whenever I am under the influence of an entheogen and my wife isn't there, I immediately, I want her to be there, you know?
Oh, so beautiful though.
Yeah.
No, she will. I know she'll feel that way too, but he doesn't think he needs it, as she said. Yeah. I shouldn't say that, but he's not. He hasn't heard the calling. So, okay, that's fine. We want to respect that. No pushing.
Right. Yeah.
But yeah, she's there for her own work, and she is going to work on her Ganjasana in the space.
That's awesome.
She'll get other things. It's all part of it. You know, it all goes back to, you know, whatever it is that's holding us back is going to surface. Right. But the primary intent is the, you know, where to from here with Ganjasana? What's it about for me? Why do I want to do it? What, you know, whatever it is that she wants to do in that space. Mm-hmm. So I'm excited about that. And there's a beautiful maloka, like it's not a maloka, but it's a separate building. That's a beautiful yoga area. Mm-hmm. So she's basically become a cannabis advocate.
Right.
In media from her experiences with ayahuasca.
Mm, that's awesome.
So then, and the medical doctor also, she was a pot doc. That's what she called it. I had never heard that term. She was a pot doc before she went to this Harvard fellowship. So she's also pro cannabis. And then let's see, we've got a woman who has been doing a lot of the psychedelic work in Reality Sandwich and Evolver for a long, long time. Mm-hmm. And I haven't asked her permission to use her name, so I'm not going to.
Okay.
She's really lovely and a writer, and she's also going through her Saturn return, and she is, she wants to work on some really personal things. So I won't go into what those are. She's amazing, amazing, very deep person. And I have a woman who is Colombian American, who is going to be our translator as well. And she's extremely excited. She has tried ayahuasca in Colombia. And she has not tried ayahuasca in in the Peruvian Amazon. She's also really interested in speaking to women, the woman shaman and other women in the village and in Iquitos, about their life around this, you know, ayahuasca tourism, which is not, I don't really like that term, but, you know, Westerners coming to Iquitos to try ayahuasca, basically. So she's going to be doing that. That's her primary intent and her own personal, obviously. So
interesting.
It's just something, you know, that I really love doing. And there's the wide range of ages kind of goes back to this psychedelic parenting thing, because it's not, I'm not doing parenting, but what I'm trying to do is sort of encourage people to have this experience who I think may find it very valuable and then in turn may spread the word.
It's all right, fairy godmothering.
It kind of feels like that.
Yeah.
But some of them are my own age or older, so it's not exactly parenting.
No, but it's influencing the culture. You know, I heard a woman speak at the conference that I was at 2 weeks ago in Ashland, and she was talking about what the culture of ancient Greece was like and how everybody who mattered in terms of like shaping of the culture, all of these people had experienced the Eleusinian mysteries. And she was saying, this was fundamentally a psychedelic, an entheogenic society. Like everybody had this experience. Like you couldn't hold office if you didn't have this experience. You wouldn't be taken seriously as a scholar if you didn't have this experience. And, you know, I would love to see that kind of a thing reemerge in our culture. So I think
That's
you're doing
your
a great
vision.
Thing.
That's your vision. That's very funny, because I'm just trying to imagine our current, you know, situation with politics. I'm trying to see them all drinking ayahuasca together or whatever, magic mushrooms, anything. Smoking a peace pipe.
Something, anything, yeah.
Well, yeah, no, I'm pretty well versed on the ancient Greek because my mother's Greek and I was very interested in that. So it was something that I did all the way through school. Double major kind of thing.
Uh-huh.
And I was especially interested in archetypal psychology, and I knew there were psychedelics involved, but I wasn't doing psychedelics myself.
Right.
But what I got that I thought was really fascinating, and, you know, makes perfect sense that this came from psychedelic work, they would create archetypes that were meant to just be creative tools, you know, poetic tools that were human, that you could then express with creatively. Like, you weren't really meant to just look at the Greek myths as if, well, this is Orpheus and he does this and this happens. And no, that was the basic. Mm-hmm. That was a myth that was a beautifully put together story about certain archetypes relating to each other.
Yeah.
But then you could go and you could play with the archetypes in different relationship situations and begin to learn about yourself, about your culture, about human nature. And I love that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it's kind of a universal language.
Yeah. And I think we can still do that. If we choose to do so, we can continue to have that kind of relationship with like myth and religious expression. Like one of the movies that I really am into is Darren Aronofsky's recent version of Noah that has Russell Crowe and Jennifer Connelly in it.
So
and
you liked it, did you?
I did. And I liked it because it was like, I like the way that they sort of re-engineered the myth to like have it be like, you know, it's about environmentalism and he drinks ayahuasca to have this, to communicate with God. And, you know, it's like takes this old story and it tells us a story about ourselves better than the old version does. You know what I mean?
These stories were supposed to be played with.
Right.
And this is another thing people don't know a lot of times is the statesmen who were, a lot of the people who were creating these kinds of things, the philosophers and whatnot, were paid by the government full time. They had, this is all they were supposed to do.
Yeah.
They just did this for years, hundreds of years. So there was a lot of richness in that kind of culture because
That's
of awesome. That.
Yeah.
So if you were gifted enough, you were supported to do that because that was considered something that was giving to the rest of humanity. There was none of the scrambling for funding, which is such a shame.
Right.
So much talent is lost and wasted because of that. So much. Because so many of the best talents have not got a clue how to deal with business.
Yeah.
It's not in their makeup.
Right. Right. And we don't
and it can't be, right? you know, sorry.
That's okay. I was going to say that we don't have a place of honor for like, you know, creative people and artists. And we also, I think, you know, one of the things that I always had in this back of my mind when I was a kid is like, you know, as jobs become automated, well then, you know, if you're a, you know, if you're an auto worker and they create a robot to replace your job, shouldn't you get to retire and, you know, become a musician or something? Like,
right.
But that's not how it works. So
no, yeah. It's not. You know, it's just like we don't respect the arts as well in our culture. It's too bad. It's really too bad. But that's all. That's true in so many things. In the sciences too. The high sciences are like art.
Mm-hmm.
The really, really amazing scientists are. They're scrambling for funding a lot of the times too. And unfortunately, so many of them are seduced into really bad jobs, like working for Monsanto or something, because they know they have to make a living.
Yeah. And those people pay.
You know, they have a calling. They have to do their thing, you know?
Right.
And so they can get corrupted or stuck in situations or, you know, all sorts of things. It's, we have a very strange culture. And yeah, I do think, again, back to psychedelics, you know, I do feel that, I don't know, look, I'm an optimist.
Mm-hmm.
I have hope. I feel like this is one of the only chances we have to evolve ethically before it's too late.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Yeah, there's not going to be enough natural resources. You know, we've used up the oil. There, if society were to fall, then, you know, there's not going to be another go around.
We need to move on to the next level of our evolution, which I think is emotional or spiritual. If you don't like the word spiritual, then emotional, psychological, whatever that word is, we need to get out of our heads and or change our mindsets. It needs to be a big, big shift. And I've not seen anything as fast as psychedelics.
Right.
That's just the truth. I've just not seen it. And I've been without it for many years, and I've worked on myself in many other ways, and I've gotten great results in many ways. I've also been to really great therapists along the way to work on specific things. There's a different level of healing. And I think that, you know, one of the things, I don't speak Spanish, so I will hear the shaman talking trauma, you know. Traumas, there are so many traumas in our lives, little ones, medium ones, big ones, huge ones, you know, all these little teeny things through life, something someone said, something, you know, like a friend of mine, you know, almost drowned in the ocean once. She talks about that as if it was yesterday, if you ask her, mm-hmm. She was a kid. You know, when I go back and I focus on some of those things that I have, memories that I have from when I was a kid. Mm-hmm. You know, if you think about all the near-death things that you got through as a child, it's a miracle that we make it, really.
Yeah.
You know, I was telling Chris the other day doing yoga, I said, I recalled the feeling and the sound of a horse's hoof flying by my face when I was about six.
Oh, wow.
I was not meant to be on that horse, and I knew it, and I was a good girl, and I did what my daddy said. I knew he was right, and they could be dangerous if you were in their hindquarters, and we didn't know this horse, and blah, blah, blah. But my sister insisted on putting me on that horse, and I fell, of course, and yeah. I was right behind him, and he, you know, kicked, because that's what they do when something falls behind them.
Yeah.
But I recall that the sound of that hoof whizzing past my face. It would have killed me. We have a horse next door, you see? And so I'm trying, he just moved in. Our neighbor's got a beautiful Palomino, and I love horses, but I have this fear, see? So I'm like, I'm going to work on that in the ayahuasca space. I don't want to have that fear about horses. There is a fear that I still carry. It's a little trauma that happened.
Yeah.
So for me, that's something that's definitely something I would tell a young person, like back to the, what would you tell somebody?
Mm-hmm.
I think I would go through to walk them through some of the steps of what psychedelics can help you with, what types of things they can be really helpful for, such as that.
Right.
I think that would be really important. Any kind of conversation you can have with anybody, the more you talk, the better.
Yeah.
Ask them to tell you about themselves, You know, before any of the women go down to the Amazon, we have a lot of conversation, and often it'll be long into the conversation, someone will say something, and I'll go, there it is, write it down. And they'll be like, what? That kind of thing in the ayahuasca space, you may find relief.
Nice.
You know, so you come to recognize these things.
Yeah.
So psychedelic mentoring is the takeaway.
Test like, yes, indeed. Yep. Psychedelic mentoring.
I do want to end with something. I just thought, you know how they say it takes a village to raise a child?
Right.
That's really what this is about.
Yes,
we all need to be there. All of us need to be there for everybody's kids.
Exactly. And, you know, the one of the things that I've said over and over to people is that, you know, if you want to create a new culture, it's not only about teaching your kids what you believe, but you also have to have, like, other adults around who, like, corroborate your story. So it's not just, you know, crazy things that mom and dad do.
Yes, that's so true.
Yeah.
And the thing about the whole fairy goddess mother idea is, like, what we had talked about earlier is there is a natural thing about young people wanting to move on from their parental, you know, from wanting their parents' approval or wanting to look to their parents for answers. It's natural. It's part of leaving the nest, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. So you want to have somebody out there who you trust,
right?
Who they trust, who, you know, who you have a relationship with, to ask these kind of questions. What you don't want is your kid running off to some party and asking some random person.
Yes, 100% true. Yes, indeed.
It's either one thing or the other. It's just like sex. Sex is the same thing. You know, you can tell your kids a certain amount about sex, but at a certain point, they're like, oh, that's so weird, Mom. Oh,
right.
Dad, don't tell me. Oh, God. You know, they want to ask somebody else.
Right.
They don't even really want to ask anybody. But so it's better for them to hear it from somebody they can trust and think is cool, hopefully.
Yeah, exactly.
Then learn it from a porno flick.
Yes, 100%.
So same thing with this. You think about it. Think about the worst case scenario of where they could learn about psychedelics.
Yeah, the worst case. Yeah, just some dude on the street selling, you know, telling them that it's LSD and it's really N-bomb and, you know. You don't even know what there is anymore.
Or some party.
Right.
Some party where somebody's like, quote, a shaman, unquote.
Ugh.
Yeah. You know, it's better for us all to be there for each other's kids.
Amen.
Can you think of anything else you want to ask?
I think that's great. Yeah, and I normally keep this to an hour, and we've talked for like 2 hours, so...
You're going to have to cut some.
It may just have to be two episodes. I think there's...
No. Well, thank you. No, I mean, I really enjoy talking to you, and I think this is such fascinating stuff, and I agree with you about how having a community is so great to be able to have conversations with each other about it, because we're doing strange things.
We are.
It is pioneer work.
Yeah, I agree. Thank you so much for being here, Zoe.
Well, thank you. Thanks for the work you're doing.
Oh, yeah, you as well.